Thanks for inserting Wisconsin Public Radio in your day. We have a lot to hear, like the arts and culture of Western Wisconsin, on this Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Good to have you along. Thanks for joining us. This week, there's STEAM in Menominee on the UW Stout campus. For many young people, it's full steam ahead. We'll tell you about a camp for that purpose. Next week is the final Jubilee fundraiser for the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council. President Pam Rasmussen is here for a unique perspective on a unique artistic transition in Eau Claire. Jim Oliver lists what's on stage in our big region and also has a look at the Red Box, opening soon at the Phipps Center in Hudson. And I suggest we launch this verbal vessel right here. We're familiar with smells like summer, tastes like summer, feels like summer, and then there's sounds like summer. Thankfully, we're acquainted with that concept as well. It's where music echoes across the valleys of both the Eau Claire and Chippewa Rivers in the vicinity of downtown Eau Claire each Thursday night. And these things don't just occur spontaneously. There's a whole bunch of work that goes into making it all happen. I thought it would be enlightening to hear how it's done, so I invited Paul Brandt, a Volume 1 trooper, who does it. Sounds like summer concert series. How long has it been going on?
This is the 13th year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lucky 13.
I hope so.
All right. Uh-oh. Here's something weird. There's 13 weeks of concerts.
I didn't even think about that.
I added it up, yes.
Yeah.
13 years, 13 weeks. We should probably end this interview right now.
Yeah.
So 13 weeks of concerts, and each concert averages three groups or entertainers, according to my pocket calculator. That's 39 acts. Nick Meyer from Volume 1, who you may know, said in an email that you've booked the series the last handful of years. Keeping on that mathematics theme, I'm not sure what a handful of years is. Is that 5 years because there's five fingers on
your
hand?
Sure. Handful is maybe a little generous. This is my third summer booking the concert series.
Well, maybe in his mind a handful is 3 years.
I've seen his hands. I hope not.
Ah, well, good. I'm glad you clarified that. He also said you, quote, know the event inside and out, end of quote. So here's my question, Paul. The process of securing and scheduling 39 acts, you mm-hmm. must be a good juggler.
Yes.
he said humbly. Good for you.
There is a certain amount of that. It's not, you know, it's something that takes a few months to put together. So I have the advantage of not having to do it all in, you know, a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a certain amount of getting people into the right spots and, yeah, making sure the groups that we want in the series get in the series.
There's logistics involved with all this. I mean, how do you get people? I know what it's like to try to get bands to come on a day. How do you get three groups to say, all right, that day is cool?
Well, we do have a lot of groups that contact us in advance that are interested in playing the series. And that could be groups that have played it in the past that want to come back and be a part of it. It's also a way that we get a lot of new groups into the series. That's actually something that's really important to us, to keep the series fresh and get new groups in every year.
Okay.
So with the amount of people we get asking us to be in the series, that makes it a little bit easier. And it also means that people or bands are generally willing to or able to be flexible. And the band's flexibility is really what makes it doable. Oftentimes I can ask, okay, do you have a preferred date? And then once I get that band slotted into a night, then I, you know,
sure,
kind of look at what other groups we have and see who would go well with them. Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, Thursday nights aren't a typical gig night.
Right.
For bands.
Right. Yeah,
and I was talking with Mike Fisher last week about Tuesday Night Blues, and I was asking him about getting bands from out of the state or out of the Midwest. And he said, well, you know, sometimes we get lucky because Tuesday nights, not many people are playing. They're usually driving, and if they can swoop in to Eau Claire, do you get a little bit of that? Or are all of the groups kind of Western Wisconsin-y or Minnesota?
Yes, that's kind of a central tenet of the concert series, is to really promote local acts.
Yeah,
so
okay,
every group in the series has at least some sort of tie. Usually that means they're based out of the area. In some cases, we'll have groups who maybe used to be from the area, maybe moved to the Twin Cities. But every group has some sort of connection to the Chippewa Valley.
I'm guessing you just say, be yourself, because I want to talk a little bit about how you structure the evening. I've seen the crowds there, and it is definitely all ages intended. And is there hoped to be some kind of symmetry or balance within each night? I mean, a musical flow, if you will. When you schedule groups, you don't just take three groups and say, all right, I'm lucky enough to get you three on that night. Do you have something in your mind about who opens and who goes next and who goes afterwards in a kind of a flow?
That's definitely a consideration. The order of the night is you know, each night starts with a solo or duo act at 6 p.m. They
okay.
play for about 20 to 25 minutes.
So that's walking before you run. That's a slow start. Nice,
yep.
Nice get in the
kicks
group
off the night as people are coming into the park.
Cool.
And then there are two feature acts. Those are usually full band groups that play for about 45 to 50 minutes each.
Okay.
One starting at 6:30, the other starting around 7:30. And those are the two that I'm really hoping to get some kind of good connection between or similarity in style. Not that they have to be, but we're not going to put maybe our heaviest band with our lightest band, if possible.
That was part of the question that I had jotted down. How is the flow achieved? Or doesn't it matter if you go from a solo acoustic act into some headbanging?
Well,
he said facetiously.
And you might not find a lot of headbanging in general. As you mentioned,
sure.
It is very all ages
yep.
appropriate. The phrase I use a lot is family-friendly, but not necessarily kid-centric. So, you probably won't find anything too heavy. We have a couple heavier groups in this year, Picard and Stare Across, and I know that they will be kind of stripping down a little bit what they normally do. So, you know, it'd be very different seeing them at the concert series than it would to see them, you know, maybe in some sort of other indoor venue.
So how long do the concerts go? When's the last echo going across the rivers? 6 o'clock to
yep.
what?
6 o'clock to roughly 8:30. That last band okay. has, you know, some leeway to play. But especially towards the end of the summer, you know, those last few bands that are closing out the nights are going to be experiencing some darkness.
Ah, yes.
Towards the end of their set.
Having a good time in the studio with Paul Brandt, representing Volume 1, and he is the coordinator who puts together the Sounds Like Summer concert series, which begins on the 7th of June, and we're going to give you a preview of some stuff coming up. And I have to say that I think you're the guy, maybe the first year, who sent me a list of bands, because I was looking to have a working database of groups that I might talk to on the radio every once in a while. But you must have one heck of a good database of musical groups, huh?
The contact list is very large, yes.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
How many do you think?
Oh, I haven't.
I haven't counted?
Yeah, I don't have a number, sorry.
Well, I want you to count it next time and you can get it to me.
Okay. Sure.
You have a performance area. I think people would be interested in this. We all know where that is. It's the Labyrinth, I think, at Phoenix Park. There is equipment. They all use the same electronics and just set up drums and plug in instruments. How's that set up? What kind of coordination do you provide the entertainers prior to their appearance as far as all of that mechanical stuff, electronic stuff?
Sure. All of the production side of the event in terms of sound and especially towards the end of the summer lighting
yeah.
is provided by UWEC's production crew.
Okay, cool.
And so they're usually on site mid-afternoon the day of the concert setting up mm-hmm. and getting all the PA equipment arranged. And then it's up to the bands to let them know in advance what, you know, instrumentation they'll have,
sure.
kind of a basic setup so that the sound crew can be ready with, you know, mic placements and things like that.
Okay.
And then the bands will do a sound check, in that 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock hour, and then the concert starts at 6.
All three usually get to do a sound check?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So there is a stage manager of sorts or just a crew that coordinates it all? Is there one guy who goes, you go here, you go there, or one gal?
Well, A.J. Mohan is the guy who kind of runs that whole
okay.
side. I don't know. I think there were a couple of weeks that he wasn't maybe there last year, but yeah, he's generally overseeing that.
Okay. Here's what I'd like to do. Let's, because it's traditional to do so, let's separate the summer into 3 months, which is the way it always feels anyway. Give us an overview of June, and then towards the end of June, we'll have you back on the phone to preview July and so on. How's that?
Sure. You
want to give us an idea of who's coming in June, the dates?
Sure. So on Thursday, June 7th, kicking off the whole summer, we have Waldemar, Nikki Pepper, and Savannah Smith.
I don't think we have time to talk about what they are. We'll have to hope that people recognize. I see an Eau Claire native there, Savannah Smith, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Are you looking for the
well,
names of
you could
group,
give me,
or?
Yeah, well, you could give me a real thumbnail, but I mean, I don't know if we have time to go through what everybody does, alternate tunings. And sure. So Savannah Smith is a solo act?
Yep. She'll be the kind of that pre-show 6 o'clock opener leading into Nikki Pepper and Waldemar.
Okay. And they are groups?
Yes.
So the 14th of June.
14th of June, we have Resonant Rogues, Red Tide, and Intuitive Compass. Those are actually, Resonant Rogues and Intuitive Compass are both acts that are not currently in Eau Claire but have Eau Claire ties. So this is kind of a rare case where we are bringing someone in from outside the area.
I love the process of naming groups nowadays, don't you?
it's very difficult, yeah.
Intuitive Compass, wow. I would have never thought of that when I was a young guy. Thursday, the 21st of June, we have whom?
Laska, Nick Anderson and the Skinny Lovers, and Parker Reed.
Talking with Mike Fisher last week, they have a band coming called Squishy Mud.
Oh, sure.
Isn't that a great name?
Yeah.
Skinny Lovers is not bad either.
Yeah.
All right, so the 28th of June, the final June concert features...
The Collective Choir, which is a really large group led by Mike Rambo, who's been involved in the concert series in the past.
Heard of mine, yeah.
The Over-Unders and Sage Leary.
Sage Leary's a solo act.
Correct.
So you didn't give them an order of appearance.
I actually gave them to you in reverse order with last band of each night first.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
You don't have any problem coming back at the end of June to preview July?
No, I'd be happy to.
Well, I knew that. Amiable guy. I appreciate you coming in. And hey, I mean, I am very impressed at the ability to set up something this aggressive. It is in its 13th year. Do you feel like you've taken it to new heights?
I think so. Tyler Griggs, who booked the series before me, really did a nice job of setting up, you know, good spreadsheets and documents and gave me a nice list of how to prioritize things. And it runs fairly smoothly, actually.
I'm sure it does. Paul Brandt, sounds like summer concert series starts June 7th. Last night is August 30th, and we'll tell you who's coming along the way. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Jim Oliver is next, and later a jubilee unlike any other, and young people let off or pick up steam on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona. Collections comprised of art inspired by water from European and American masters, including Picasso, Audubon, and others. More about the museum at mmam.org. Might recognize a little Sue Orfield in the background there. Time now, ladies and gentlemen, for Jim Oliver to make his presence known as a valued weekly Spectrum West contributor. He takes us to check out what's going on in Hudson.
Fans of the old-time radio dramas heard Saturdays and Sunday evenings on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio are sometimes treated to an episode of Nero Wolfe. The 1940s and 50s shows were adapted from the mystery series written by Rex Stout. A stage play, The Red Box, a Nero Wolfe mystery by Joseph Goodrich, a Minnesota author and director and actor, and adapted from the 1937 novel by Rex Stout, will open Friday and continue Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays through June 17th at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. Joining us by telephone from his home is the director, Ben Lane. I'm old enough to have listened to the original broadcasts of Nero Wolfe, which featured Sidney Greenstreet most of the time, and then a variety of actors who played his loyal assistant, Archie Goodwin. So you tell us a little bit about the story of The Red Box.
Yeah, that's sort of, I think, works best to begin with kind of who Nero Wolfe is. I like to liken him to sort of the first anti-hero, or maybe not first, but one of the first anti-heroes, maybe in kind of American literature or culture, what have you. I imagine him sort of almost like the, you know, 40s or 50s novel version of like a Dr. Gregory House, MD, from the show House that was on Fox for years with Hugh Laurie. If you were a detective instead of a doctor and a shut-in. He's kind of an abrasive guy. I think he likes to stay within his office and his building in New York there, because while he's within his world at home, he can be the master of his domain. The outside world doesn't necessarily work like that. But it turns out that he's a very brilliant detective, even doing it sort of by proxy. If any information needs to be received from the outside world, he sends his assistant, Archie Goodwin, to kind of go and take care of that. He leaves the house exceedingly rarely, I think is probably the best way to put it. Over the course of this particular mystery in the Red Box, family kind of comes to him for help because a friend of theirs, Wade McNair, is a fashion designer who has one of his models murdered at his latest fashion show. And it turns out that they were murdered from a poison box of candy. And so this mystery kind of takes off from there. And the titular Red Box is this mysterious item that Boyd McNair has that seems to be the key to the entire mystery, but nobody can seem to find it. And it completely baffles the police as well, who also turn to Nero Wolfe for assistance. And so with all these different competing and countervailing forces, it becomes one of the most difficult mysteries that Nero Wolfe has ever taken on. And in the stage version, he comes up with a very ingenious sort of way to handle that. And he does so in the book, too, but the two are similar yet radically different. So if there are fans out there who know the book, they'll be coming to see the show, and it handles things in a very different light, which is kind of cool.
So. The Park Square Theater in St. Paul commissioned a world premiere stage adaptation of The Red Box, which was presented in 2014. As indicated, it was written by Joseph Goodrich. That was the very first Rex Stout book that was ever adapted for the stage, as I recall.
Yes.
Have you been able to, since he's from Minnesota and all of that, have you ever been able to tie into him for any advice or anything as you are directing this show?
I haven't been able to, unfortunately. I don't have, like, his email address or contact information, really. I made a couple of inquiries through Park Square about it, but just hooking up with him didn't quite end up working out, so it's kind of been just soldiering on our own.
Mm-hmm. The Park Square seems to have a tie-in with the Rex Stout family because they've also done a second show now last year, Might As Well Be Dead, both of which are authorized by the Stout family. Talk a little bit about the production of the show. Is it a complex set that you use?
The really great thing about it, and I think this is why I think, anyway, pretty soon these Rex Stout mysteries, as they keep being made, and hopefully Park Square keeps making them, because I think they're wonderful pieces of theater, and it's a good place for them to start, and then, you know, other theaters around the country can kind of latch onto it. But the nature of Nero Wolfe as a character, in fact, that he is kind of a shut-in, lends itself really well to the stage, because you can have just one unit set. Everything can happen in his office in his brownstone in New York. And so, you know, so long as you can find some way to get the characters to come together within his office there, it's very easy to stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, really straightforward kind of in that sense. You just have the one set to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
What that ends up doing then is you really have to make the story about the characters, since you're not moving a lot of sets or changing locations, things like that. It's an opportunity to really dig into the characters and, you know, figure out what makes these individual people tick, and how their different wants and needs clash with one another, and that's ultimately what makes for really good drama. And especially with a nice murder mystery like this, you know, it's always the characters that bring those kinds of things to life, because it's the ins and outs of the relationship that ultimately give you the backstory of the mystery and you know, ultimately the solution as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a lot of fun to work with the cast on that, to figure out who these people are and how they kind of interact with one another and what we can bring out of it to entertain the audience, intrigue the audience, give them little hints, that kind of thing, and just keep the keep everybody rolling along with the mystery as well.
We're talking to Ben Lane, who is director of the Phipps Center for the Arts production of The Red Box. Well, going a little bit to your background in theater, I noticed you have a BA in theater performance from the University of Northern Iowa. And among other things, you are co-artistic director of Freshwater Theater, along with your wife.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Freshwater Theater.
Yeah, my wife and I started Freshwater Theater back in 2011. We're just a small theater company in the Twin Cities area. We mostly perform out of Minneapolis. And we really focus on plays that are by and about the upper Midwest, so sort of the freshwater area of the country. So we've done several shows that are about Minnesota. We did one show a couple years back that was about Racine, Wisconsin, actually. It was the Gifted program by a playwright named Ruben Carbajal, who was originally from that area. Mm-hmm. We did one play that was an original production by J. Merrill Motes, which was The Beacon from Belle Isle, which was about Michigan and kind of very specifically Detroit. So that's kind of what we do. We put together original works, new works that are by and about the sort of the upper Midwest and the stories that we can tell. So it's been a lot of fun to do, and it's a really great little passion project for us. We're very lucky to have, you know, sort of survived in this very competitive theater scene here, really for the last, 7-8 years now. Mm-hmm. And we're continuing strong. We've got another show coming up here in October as well. So it's a lot of fun to do, and like I said, it's kind of a labor of love for us.
You know, it's interesting that you thrive in a competitive situation, and that seems to be the case with many of the several theater companies that are operating in the Twin Cities area. Somehow or other, mm-hmm. they seem to thrive off each other rather than beating each other up.
Yeah, and it's kind of part of the ethos that we have too. I mean, when you know one of us does well, we all do well. A rising tide, you know, lifts all boats.
Mm-hmm.
So the better one company does, and then the more people that they can bring in, the more chance that there is that people want to go out there and try another small theater company and so on. Really easy to sort of focus on the bigger theaters that we have in this community, and rightfully so. I mean, the Guthrie's been doing some wonderful work of late. Park Square as well has been doing some marvelous things, and we have great theaters like the Jungle and Penumbra, and just a lot of wonderful theaters like Theater Moo. I mean, there and you know, Diversity and just incredible work all around. But the better we all do, the better it just seems to do for one another. It's a self-perpetuating kind of cycle. It can be really easy, I think, to get really competitive, especially in our culture. But I think the opposite ultimately ends up working out better for us in the long run. That if we support one another and we're there for one another and we say, hey, if you liked us, go check out these other things, it ends up working out for everybody.
Yeah. That's somewhat similar to the experience we have here in Western Wisconsin, where it's primarily community theater. You know, there are lots of little theater companies in smaller communities where you would hardly expect to find a community theater company. But, you know, they work with each other. They work off each other. The actors go from one place to another, and it's just a great experience for people like me to observe.
I've really enjoyed working with the Phipps, with the cast that we have for this show in The Red Box, the actors I've just thoroughly enjoyed working with, and they make some really great decisions sometimes in rehearsals that just surprise me all the time. Wonderfully talented group of people that we have. And I mean, it's really nice, too, that The Red Box also has some choice sort of supporting roles within it that can really kind of steal a scene. And everybody within this play gets an opportunity at some point or another to really shine. And I think that speaks a lot to the great work that Joseph Goodrich did with the script in the first place, to be able to balance all of these different characters and still give every actor their moment to really step out and have the spotlight on them, even with the story and a series that is sort of dominated by one or two figures. Everybody involved gets their moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been talking to Ben Lane, who is director of The Red Box, a production that opens Friday at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The show, based on a 1930s vintage novel by Rex Stout, runs through June the 17th. For ticket information, contact the Phipps ticket office at 715-386-8409 or online at thephipps.org. Ben, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you. It's been really great talking to you.
And great having Jim Oliver on the show each and every week. This is Spectrum West on WPR. Here's a Spectrum memo for you, maybe a couple. The Barron County Pioneer Village Museum opens Friday for the season. PioneerVillageMuseum.org is the website there. And remember, the Chippewa Valley Nature Festival is Friday through Sunday at UW Stout at various locations hosting field trips. Chippewa Valley Nature Festival. And you know, we are fortunate to have our finger on the pulse of theater in this part of the Midwest, and that finger belongs to Jim Oliver. Let's see what else is on stage. Here again, the aforementioned Mr. Oliver.
Thank you, sir. The Red Barn Theater of Rice Lake will stage Shout, the mod musical, through June the 9th. The ETC Children's Theater of Cumberland will present The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, June 8th through the 10th, in the Cumberland Arts Center. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will present the Farndale Area Housing Estates Townswomen's Guild Dramatic Society Murder Mystery, June 14th through the 17th, in the Oxford Theater. The Fantastics will be staged by the Festival Theater, June the 16th through July the 8th, in the Franklin Square Black Box in St. Croix Falls. The Falls Players will stage The Addams Family, the Broadway musical, June the 21st through the 24th in the Lunda Theater in Black River Falls. Pippi Longstocking will be presented by the Old Gem Theater of New Richmond for student audiences weekdays through June the 8th. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
The final Jubilee fundraiser for the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council will be a unique hybrid. It combines ECRAC, as it has stood for many years, and the Confluence Council that oversees the operational planning for the new Pablo Center. So Jubilee 2018 is one for the ages. There will not be another one like it. It's next Wednesday, June 6th, and although I have a long-standing prior commitment, I'm going to do whatever I can to walk through that door at some point in the evening. That's my story. Here's another. Pam Rasmussen, president of ECRAC, has a unique perspective on the evening and the jumping-off point it provides. She stopped in to chat about all that just the other day. Rose Dolan Neal was in a couple weeks ago, and I asked her a similar question. The Eau Claire Regional Arts Council, what's it like around there today? I imagine just a bit of fog because of all the transitions seeming to take place or about to take place. So tell me, Pam, what's the relationship between ECRAC and the emerging Pablo Center? Are they one and the same? Are they in dual roles, running at different levels of the stream? Are they separate for the time being? Is one about to be obsolete? Help me. I'm confused.
Well, let me help you figure it all out.
Please.
So the Pablo and the State Theater staff are working together to help close the State Theater,
yes,
sorry, and to open up the Pablo. Oh. And the Confluence Council, which oversees the Pablo Center, and the ECRAC board that oversees the State Theater, are working on a merger that we hope to close by the end of August and merge as one entity.
What does that merger look like? Do a lot of people not know what they're going to be doing? Is it a merger that will combine the two, or will it pare down the numbers? What will happen?
It's a merger that's going to combine the two, and we expect that quite a few of the staff will transition over to the Pablo. It depends on the positions they have open. But for the most part right now, they're working as a unit together. They're both in the same building, and it's actually pretty exciting having all the different things going on and looking forward to the Pablo at the same time having our last season at the State.
I'll bet. Just so that I can imagine it in my head, and our audience can as well, you said that you're in the same office. What kinds of things are you talking about? Because you're talking about a merger, but at the same time, what? I know the State is still alive and well, until whenever, and the Pablo is coming alive. So what kind of meetings do you have? transitional meetings? You don't look back at the state. You must look forward at the Pablo.
Yeah, what we're doing is our staff is helping the Pablo staff with us. Right now we're helping sell tickets for the tallest man on the earth.
Okay.
Because they don't have their ticketing system up yet. That'll be ready in August when they go on sale for their season.
Mm-hmm.
We're also working jointly on the Jubilee that's coming up, and we're co-sponsoring that together as a unit. And then a variety of different things with getting ready for different gallery shows at the Pablo. Rose, who you mentioned earlier, is helping set those up. So there's a lot of coordination between the two on all the new things coming up for Pablo, and sometimes helping out with how we should handle things for the remainder few months that we have at the state.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting less confused.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Thank you so much. But we'll watch as things go forward. Have there been and will there be updates on how the merger is going, or is that going to be something that's just announced or not announced?
There'll be announcements on things that are going. A few months ago, we sent out a mailing to all our members highlighting kind of some of the transitional changes we've had at the state and what we plan for the next coming months, and that the merger, we were looking at that being finalized previously at the end of June.
Okay.
But now we're looking at it being finalized at the end of August when we close our doors and the Pablo goes to open their doors and coordinate that effort. But before that happens, we hope to have an end of the state celebration and invite people over and talk about all the wonderful things we've done at the state, which actually a lot of those things are on display right now at the state at a gallery show that we have going on.
So is the fact that the merger's been postponed 2 months, is that a bad sign, or is that just the fact that you're being more meticulous?
It's a good sign. Yep, we're getting closer to the end and know that we need a little bit more time to figure out what we need to do to close our doors versus what Pablo's trying to figure out to open their doors. It's kind of we're doing the opposite at the same time, trying to figure those things out.
Well, you mentioned something a couple minutes ago called Jubilee, and it's called Jubilee 2018 specifically and officially. It's Wednesday, June 6th. Dean Kallenbach, an ECRAC board member and serving as MC for the Jubilee event. I understand you have some things to say about him because you wouldn't choose him as MC if he wasn't qualified. He described it as a, quote, a commemoration of the handoff between the old and the new. So has the planning of Jubilee 2018 focused on that mood or that atmosphere? Are we going to feel that?
Yeah, you are going to feel that. We're doing a variety of different things that's going to have people understand all the great things that we've been doing at the State Theater. We're going to have some live art where Terry Meyer and Thomas Gardner are both going to be doing some of their art at the time that people are kind of milling around and talking to each other. And we'll also have Max Gardner reading one of his poems. And then we'll have information out there about the state and its past. In addition, Jason Anderson will be there opening the event for us, kind of talking a little bit about the Pablo.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have their architect from Pablo there talking a little bit about the design of the new center and what that's going to offer for the art. And then, of course, we're going to have lots of beautiful art and gift baskets, a lot of stuff donated by all these great artists in our community who have really taken the time to donate their wares to help us raise money to continue the state's operation until August and to help the Pablo open its doors.
Our visitor in the studio is Pam Rasmussen. She is president of ECRAC. That's short for the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council. We're talking specifically, well, we're kind of generally diving into different things. Jubilee 2018, Wednesday, the 6th of June, Lismore Halls, starts at 6. Dinner, which I understand is fairly extravagant, starts at 7. Again, a quote, last big fundraiser for ECRAC. And I don't mean this to be a gotcha question at all, but if ECRAC and the Pablo Center are not the same entity yet, where are the proceeds from Jubilee going? Is it listed as a fundraiser for both? Are you going to split it? What happens?
Well, at this time, we haven't talked about splitting it, but right now, ECRAC still has funds and still has to keep its doors open till the end of August. And as ECRAC staff transitions over to the Pablo over the coming months, they're still going to stay on the ECRAC payroll until the end of August. So in essence, it's going to fund both organizations. And of course, when we close our doors and any dollars we have left in our kitty is going to go over to the Pablo to help with their operations.
I brought up Dean Kallenbach a little while ago. So what do you want to say?
Dean Kallenbach's a great guy. I can't wait to see him up there emceeing because that means I don't have to.
Has he done this before?
Yes, he has. And he's done a very good job in the past.
It's a good sign that you get asked back.
Yes, it's always a good sign to get asked back.
Yeah. I'm really interested now. You kind of went through it a little bit, but let's go through the entire evening. Let's do the whole laundry list of things that people are going to be able to do, see, taste, whatever. And then we'll talk a little bit more about the art.
Yeah, we have appetizers and cocktails at 6 o'clock, so people can come in and enjoy that. At that time, we'll have a variety of art items and baskets available for silent auction, and people can go around and put their bids on and outbid their friends and continue to bid them up as much as they can. And what's really going to be exciting is that Terry Meyer and Thomas Gardner are both going to be there doing their art live, which we like to show live art. So Terry will be painting one of his great paintings, and Thomas Gardner will be showing how he manipulates photos on his computer and makes these wonderful, I guess they're not paintings, but these wonderful graphic designs that he sells and does very well at.
If you are familiar with Terry Meyer's work, it is in a way abstracty that I thought it would be a lot of fun to watch him work.
Yes.
Because one of the main questions you ask a guy like Terry Meyer, when's it finished? You know, because it's so ornate and stuff all over. I interrupted. You have a raffle?
Yep, we will have a raffle, so you can buy raffle tickets when you're at the event. Actually, we're selling them right now, too, so if you want to come to the State Theater and buy some raffle tickets now, you can do that. And then we're going to have a live auction later on in the ceremony. Plus, we're going to just have a lot of really nice discussions about a little history of the state, thanking all the people over all the years who have done such great work, you know, keeping the state's doors open during the 80s and the 90s when things were a little tight, to the success we've really had over the last 5 to 10 years, and all the great things that we've been able to do there.
What a great job people have done to make the state a silk purse, because it wasn't physically. So now I'm curious about the elegant three-course dinner.
There's going to be chicken, there's going to be pork, and I know there's going to be stuffed squash with wild rice are the three choices that you can have. Now, the specifics of them I don't have memorized.
But that's almost even better, because that makes people want to.
Go to the webpage at eauclairearts.com and look up the event, and you can see your menu choices, and you can be able to buy your tickets that way. Or if you have a table of eight or more, you can call ECRAC, and they will be more than happy to help you get your tickets for the event for all the people coming with you.
Wonderful. Pam Rasmussen with us, president of ECRAC Jubilee 2018, Wednesday, June 6th. Another quote from your news release said, art luminaries from Eau Claire's past and present. Now, you mentioned a few who will be doing live art. I think everyone out there who is a Spectrum West fan and knows visual art would like to hear people who are coming.
Yeah, so we have a variety of excellent artists, and we have new people on the scene like Tim Bernicki and the wonderful woodworking that he does, Patricia Mayhew Ham and her lovely mixed media work that we all really like to see and enjoy, Terry Meyer, Alan Servas, Jill Ohm, Dick Millheiser, who is a great potter and makes some really wonderful functional pieces. Ander Schaefer has a wonderful piece in the auction alongside his wife, Barb. They always do a great job with donating and providing us great pieces. Mel Sunby has a vase for us. And Steve Immerman has made this beautiful glass piece that you have to go to our website and see it. And then you have to come and buy it because it's gorgeous. It shows the confluence of the Eau Claire and Chippewa Rivers in glass. And it's stunning. He made it specifically for this event. And we couldn't be more pleased with what he's done.
Cool.
Kelsey Winberg, Gail Schellinger, Steve Katrasitz, Jeff Nelson, Nancy Erickson Dutmer, Mark Blasky, of course, and C.V. Peterson.
So that really is a who's who of artists in this region. That's wonderful. You must have a lot of clout to be able to get all those people together in one evening.
Oh, they're all great supporters of the arts and are doing a wonderful job just coming and helping us celebrate this last year at the state.
Tell me about awards presentation. What kind of awards are going to be handed out?
We're so excited about the awards this year. We get to recognize a business that has done tremendous work in supporting the arts in the Chippewa Valley over a long period of time, Volume 1.
Okay.
They have just been one of the key reasons why the scene is just growing, their use of media to communicate and help support a lot of the events that we see. And then individual and supported the arts is going to be Vicki Hain with RCU, and I think most people know she's been integral with the Confluence and putting that work together, being a great chairperson. If you want to ever learn how to run a meeting, call Vicki. So we really appreciate everything that she's done.
All right. Everyone has heard all we've had to say, and they are intrigued, and they want to go. How do they go?
If they want to go, they go to our website at eauclairearts.com, and they can go to events and click on Jubilee, order their tickets online, or they can also call the state. It's 832-ARTS they can call, and we'll be more than happy to help them get their tickets.
Wonderful. Pam Rasmussen, thanks, and all the best going forward, and thank you for serving as president of ECRAC. Are you looking for a capacity at that? No, you have a regular job.
I have a regular job, and I've been keeping pretty busy at the state, but I'm also on the board for the Confluence Council, so I'll be observing what's going on at Pablo for the next few years also, and I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, and that's going to be a nice view, isn't it?
It is going to be a beautiful view, definitely.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
EauClaireArts.com. Go there because you won't be able to forever. And attend Jubilee 2018 if you can. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from Marquardt Toyota, dedicated to providing an enjoyable and stress-free buying process with welcoming facilities. Located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or at MarquardtToyota.com. And remembering the full and exemplary life of Lee Marquardt. I'm Al Ross. Good to have you along this week. When one thinks of summer, one doesn't usually want to think of steam, but if you're a young person looking to gather as much steam as possible to help power a bright future, then steam makes sense. Steam is spelled by the first letters of science, technology, engineering, art, and math. UW Stout is well known for providing summer opportunities that provide brief involvement, as my guest, Anna McCabe, related. You are listed as involved in UW Stout Professional Education. Describe that department and things in which it involves itself for our audience, would you please?
Sure. So the University of Wisconsin Stout's Professional Education Programs and Services provides non-credit outreach both to professionals, so industry, business, whether that's some kind of project management training, or we do lean certification series, or we have some ISO internal auditor workshops. But we also do just various industry outreach. Like, I know you and I have spoke before because we have the Midwest Craft Brewers Conference.
Yes.
And so that is to the craft brewing industry. Then we do have some more kind of community outreach, like the Red Cedar Watershed Conference, and then similar to these camps. So we have a diverse audience, but it's all non-credit.
So is this the same as continuing education?
It is, essentially. But sometimes I think a lot of continuing education offices at different campuses, you know, might do more community-based learning, whereas a lot of our outreach is more directed for a professional audience.
All right. We're on the phone specifically to talk about the UW Stout STEAM Summer Camp for middle and high school students. This is in its third year, and you are the camp organizer, for lack of a better term. First, give us an idea of how this camp and concept has grown in its 3 years, or its 2 years, and now the third.
Sure. It initially started in 2016 with a former colleague of mine, and it was a STEM camp and a design camp.
Okay.
So it was really just kind of two offerings. The STEM camp was sciencey, building rockets, and then the design camp was largely just game design. And they were both, you know, great successes, kind of filled up, but only had a capacity for about 48 campers each week. So it was just 1 week of each topic. And so then last year, when I kind of took over the camp, we kind of decided to grow the design camp to an art and design camp. And so we offered three camp tracks, so studio art, interior design, and game design.
Okay.
And then we continued with the STEM camp, so 2 weeks. So then we kind of, you know, did the STEM, and we did drones last year. And then we had the art and design camp offerings. But for this year, we wanted to kind of work, you know, across campus and make 1 week of all sorts of offerings. And so it started with, well, we have two tracks that are full. In total, we have 13 track offerings for the STEAM experience camp.
Okay.
So, and then STEAM being science, technology, engineering, arts, and math.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we've all heard STEM before, but
correct.
You took it to another level. Good for you.
We did, yes.
My next curiosity is, organizing something like this, I can imagine having to enlist the services of people, namely, and tell me if I'm wrong, UW Stout personnel who would normally or might be enjoying the beginning of a summer break of sorts, but they opt to help out at the camp. Tell me about those people and who you get also from the outside.
Yeah, we have almost all UW Stout faculty teaching these courses, and we have some involvement from K-12 teachers. They are just really passionate about, you know, their subject matter, their expertise, and sharing it with, you know, kind of a younger audience, younger than college students, because this is for 8th through 12th graders. They've been really great and on board since we started planning in the fall. And some faculty members specifically that were also teaching last year, like Tamara Brantmeyer is doing studio art, and so she taught that last year as well. And all her campers just had such an amazing experience, as well as Shelley Pekka teaching interior design. So they're just, you know, I think very passionate about their subject matter expertise and, you know, really just awesome about collaborating and wanting to share that with, you know, a younger audience.
On the phone with Anna McCabe, we're talking about the Summer STEAM Experience. That's kind of an acronym for science, technology, not kind of an acronym, it is an acronym. Science, technology, engineering, art, and math. The UW Stout STEAM Summer Camp is for middle and high school students entering grades 8 through 12. The experience is June 17th through the 21st, and you are welcoming, according to the release I'm looking at the moment, approximately 300 campers to your campus. This, as you alluded earlier, and I just did as well, involves science, technology, engineering, art, and math. So will everyone get a dose of each? Can they choose participation? What happens when they come to the camp?
So they are choosing a specific track, and we have those all on our website. But we will have kind of cross-sector activities because we have, you know, programming in the evenings, whether that's, you know, some kind of an art activity for all the campers or a science activity for all the campers or for them to choose which one they would like to do. And then we will have a career panel as well with representatives from, you know, various businesses, organizations that are working in a career of various sciences or arts.
Okay. Now, the fact that this is only 3 years old, you are not hearing from alums who are out in the professional world and telling you how much this experience meant to them. But what are students telling you? Well, you could have had seniors a year ago or 2 years ago who are now in college. Do they talk about the priceless experience or adventure that this is?
I think we need to get a little bit more of those testimonials. We've been very fortunate to partner with the Eau Claire Area School District since the beginning. So we have campers now registered that will be, you know, the third year of attending this camp, you know, coming from the Eau Claire Area School District. And I would love to hear, you know, those testimonials or some that are now in college and specifically chose to venture into a major that they learned more about at camp. So that's really exciting information that we don't really have yet, but we would love to really connect more with current campers that will be this coming June and then, you know, past campers that kind of had those eye-opening experiences from attending camp here.
Now, from the vantage point of expectations, tell the young people who are out there or whose parents or grandparents are listening, and they may tell them about it. I mean, you've talked already about the educational aspects of the camps. There's also some social stuff to be done. They don't just come to do
to learn.
You know, yeah, to learn. They have fun.
They do. Yes, absolutely. We really want it to be a great experience in all areas. So when they come to campus on Sunday, the 17th, we will be doing the ropes course. So it's kind of a challenge course of, you know, team building activities. And that's, you know, here on campus. And it's really, really awesome to see the campers kind of getting out of their comfort zone and working together in their small groups to achieve, you know, these obstacles and to get through, you know, whether it's a climbing wall or, you know, tightrope, things like that.
Okay.
So we also, you know, have fun activities in the evenings, like we have yoga planned and we have dodgeball and a bonfire and fun stuff like that where they can, you know, do all sorts of things and, you know, really get to know other campers and, you know, just enjoy the week of camp here on campus.
So it is campy in some ways.
It is. We do kind of want it to be somewhat, you know, quote unquote camp-like. So, we did a bonfire last year as well, and it was cool to see the kids that wanted to participate and make s'mores. So, we want to include that as well.
I mean, campy might be the wrong term, because I think the definition of campy is not the best
maybe
thing
not,
to.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe not staying in the dorms, but.
Yes, yes. Okay. Now, there are scholarships available, too, I understand. You know, we only have one day remaining for registration, and this is airing with only one day remaining for registration. So I guess my first question would be, at this late hour, how can someone get in if they want to? And it's probably too late to get a scholarship, but for next year, they could consider that route.
Absolutely. Well, all of the Eau Claire Area School District scholarships have been met, so that is full.
Okay.
But for campers in other school districts, in the Menominee Area School District specifically, they can still register, and they are able to attend as a day camper or a commuter at no cost. And so they can definitely go to our website. So that is www.uwstout.edu/steam.
Okay.
We're working with other organizations, and we have maybe a select few scholarships potentially available, but you can definitely still register, and all the information is still on our website.
Wonderful. Anna McCabe, our guest, Summer STEAM Experience, UW Stout Summer Camp for middle and high school students, June 17th through 21st. And the fact that you are hearing this means you have one more day to get in. And she just told you how to do that. So, Anna, thanks for all the info, and have fun at camp.
Thank you. We will.
Have some time for a quick Spectrum memo or two. Haugard's West Denmark Fiddle School returns for the fourth year. The instructor's concert is at West Denmark Lutheran Church Tuesday, June 12th, 8 p.m. Also a finale concert in the Luck High School Auditorium Thursday, June 14th at 7:30 p.m. Music in the Park starts 6 p.m. June 7th in Ladysmith's Memorial Park. Colfax Music in the Park begins Thursday, June 14th at 7 p.m. in Tower Park. Downtown Center Stage, the Art of the Theater is an artifacts exhibit. Open at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center, State Theater, Janet Carson Gallery, of course. If you're listening Thursday, there's an artist reception from 5 to 7 p.m. today. Thanks, Kate and Dean, and welcome Cora, a new publicity intern whose name you'll hear here for the next few months. I want to tell you, we're going to be taking a couple weeks off, and we'll return with our first June edition of Spectrum West on the 21st of next month. In the meantime, advocate for the arts, cultivate the culture of Western Wisconsin, and when we return on the 21st of June, we'll resume doing that together. I'm Al Ross for Jim Oliver. Thanks.